Episode 6.
Blog Talk no. Radio.
What's
here
up,
we go,
everybody?
Here we go.
Lee and Keys, episode 6. We back another one again. We got plenty of stuff to talk about tonight. Got a couple guests calling in. We're gonna be hearing what's on their mind too. Get a couple takes going around. So, anyways, the first order of business tonight, we got Bisping, Michael Bisping stepped up to fight Kelvin Gastelum this weekend in Shanghai. So I know that one's supposed to go down like early in the morning. I don't know. That's kind of weird. I'll probably miss it. But Lee, how you feel about that one? Who you got in that fight?
Oh, man, this is a tough one. But I'm going to use the eye contest on this one. Michael Bisping just came off of a fight against George St. Pierre where he got choked out. And then he took this fight on short notice. I don't like the way that sets up for him. I think Gastelum has been waiting on this fight, and I think he finishes Bisping, and Bisping probably takes about 6 to 8 months off, and he comes back and fight Luke Rockhold. But I just don't see Bisping being effective in this fight. It's just too quick of a turnaround. So, man, even though he's a warrior, man, that's just too quick of a turnaround for me. What you think?
See, my thing is that I agree. I think Bisping, I mean, I was listening to something today. They were saying that, you know, Bisping got – they made it sound like he got killed in that GSP fight. First of all, he fought a good fight. But when you – and both of them here, Gastelum got finished in his last fight too by Chris Weidman. I think he lost that one by submission. And so they both coming off of losses in their last fight. But, you know, having been on, you know, the card 2 weeks ago, whenever – for Bisping, it's really short notice. I mean – I'm probably gonna go with Kelvin Gastelum. You know, I think he'll likely win, but I'll be rooting for Bisping anyways because I'm not really a big Kelvin Gastelum fan. So I'd like to see Bisping win and surprise us. I know he has it in him, but I'm leaning towards Gastelum, you know, with my logic. And you know, another thing that I think plays a factor is you gotta remember he was training for. He's been training for Anderson Silva fight for, you know, months now. And he knows Anderson Silva, no matter how old, he's an elite striker. So Kelvin Gastelum has to adjust to that, and that's what he was preparing for. And then now getting Bisping on short notice, who just got finished in his last fight 2 weeks ago, Gastelum's got the upper hand a lot in this one. That's how it feels.
I totally agree. I just don't like the idea of Bisping coming off of that quick turnaround. That was a really, really quick turnaround. But you never know in UFC. All it takes is for one person to get clipped and the fight is over or make a mistake and get submitted. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, anybody who's up at, you know, 7 a.m. this Saturday or Sunday, whatever, I'm not sure what day it is, but if you're up at 7 in the morning, you can give us a rundown. We probably won't hit you right back on the timeline. You know, we're kind of like sleeping at that hour. We might be awake. Who knows? But I know I won't be. I mean, I might still be too full.
I think I'm going to get up and watch it. I think I'm going to get up and watch it. So we'll see what's up. But don't hold me to that.
No, I won't. But if you do give me that rundown, you know, eight, whatever time that fight gets on. Actually, that might be at a decent hour. But, you know, you got to have Fight Pass, though, to watch it. Fight Pass exclusive.
Oh, well, I won't be watching that, then. So I'll be following on ESPN or through Twitter. So we'll see what happens. I definitely don't have Fight Pass.
We'll just be waiting for that, like, 30-second clip or whatever of, like, this thing.
That's right.
Finish. Crazy. See Bisping is coming out like crazy and just like imagine Bisping is coming out and just knocking him out in the first round, like in like, you know, the first like 40 seconds of the fight, man. Can you imagine? like when McGregor knocked out Aldo. Hasn't?
I would be shocked if Bisping did that, but I don't see him doing that. I see him probably fighting a cautious fight and feeling Gastelum out and look for his shots. So I don't know, but we'll see what's up. Hello. Look like I lost my boy Keys. So let me pick up on one of my guests, Rodney. Hey, Rodney, what's up, man?
Yo, what's good?
What's up, man? We lost Keys right now, so you know I'm hitting you up real quick. Hey, but look, since I got you on the line, let me ask you a question, bro.
What's good?
So, one of our topics tonight, being that Keys is we waiting on him to get back in. Hey, are the Celtics for real, bro?
Yo, man. Look, I'm gonna say it's about the Celtics, man. Even though Gordon Hayward went out at the beginning, the rookie Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown was stepping up real quick, man. They were doing a hell of a job. Meanwhile, Kyrie, he showed his growth. He showed his growth a lot. And plus, the everybody else, they showing that they got great defense, which is motivating Kyrie to do some more defense. And that, I think that's making them overall growing. So I think they might be. But at the same time, it's only the beginning of the season. We still got a little bit more to learn about for like 70, 60 more games. But so far, they're starting out strong now. We got to see how long they're doing for the long run.
Okay, I like that. I like that. Hey, Keys, you back with me, huh?
Yeah, actually, I hung up by accident. I hit the button. I didn't even know how mad I was.
Don't you hate me, man?
Y'all hear me, though?
Right, Keys, well, look, man. Yeah, I can hear you. Hey, Rodney, hold on real quick, all right?
What's good?
All right, hold on real quick, okay? We're going to come back to
it. All right, no problem.
All right, Keys, man. So now that you're back, let's transition to two other fights, man, you talked about this week. And then I'm going to let you get into your T-Wood love, because we have to have that that portion of the show every show.
Yeah.
we got to have the T-Wood portion of the show. But look, man, let's talk about this Derek Brunson and Jacare Souza fight and also the Vitor Belfort and Uriah Hall fight. Hey, man, I'm telling you now, I like these two fights. The only fight I'm really worried about out of these two fights is Derek Brunson versus Souza in Brazil, because I think Brunson will have to have a dominant performance for him to win on the judges' card, or he's going to have to finish Souza. If it's anything close, they're going to get a fight to Souza, because, you know, UFC scoring is kind of shady. And I think, man, you have agreed on this before, that the judges should have to show their scorecards at the end of every round so that we as the fan get a better understanding on how they judge the rounds or where each fighter stands. But I like this fight for Brunson, because if he wins this fight, he should get a title shot. And Vitor Belfort and Uriah Hall, man, is very underrated. Belfort, he is a legend. I think Hall is going to get him problems, man, because Hall is very unorthodox. He's kind of slick with his moves. He's in and out. He can kick you. He can punch you. He can also wrestle off his back. So, man, that's a tough fight to pick. Only thing Hall has to do is be on his defensive game. He can't let Belfort charge him and dictate the pace. What you think about these two fights, bro?
Well, first of all, for the Belfort and Uriah Hall, as I know, Vitor Belfort, I think, isn't he coming off ironically, I think he fought Kelvin Gastelum in his last fight, no?
Gastelum fought him in Brazil, and I think Gastelum beat him in Brazil, and then Gastelum lost to Weidman in his last fight.
Yeah. So Vitor Belfort coming off a loss. I mean, I probably edge the one to Uriah Hall. I don't think, you know, Vitor Belfort is kind of like, you know, you watch him, it's kind of like watching Anderson fight. I mean, you only just think about, you know, who they were and think about them years ago. Vitor Belfort was unstoppable for a long time. You watch his, you know, old footage, and it's like nobody, you know, this fight back then, you know, Uriah Hall wouldn't have stood a chance. But nowadays, Vitor is a bit more washed up, on the washed up end. And Uriah Hall, I mean, he's young. And I'd probably edge it to Uriah Hall on paper, but I don't know. Maybe we'll see the old Vitor. I mean, last thing I heard, he said he was healthy. He said that he felt good. You know, he's been getting in shape, and he's in good condition. So, I guess we'll see what happens. What was the other one? You said, oh, yeah, Derek Brunson. Oh, man. You know what's funny?
Yep.
Last week we were
That's
talking about
That's your
fight.
That's the one you've been hyping about.
Yeah, I've been hyping. You asked me who is a fighter that is on the come up that you want to point out. And I remember I said Mickey Gall. I wasn't expecting the question, so I threw that out. If I had time to think about it, I probably would have said Brunson. He's somebody on the come up that I thought that people should look out for. And like you said, he had that questionable decision loss to Anderson in the last fight. You know, I think Brunson, he responded. Jacare accepted the fight, and he hasn't responded, you know, to sign the contract for the fight, so it's halfway done. I know Jacare wants to get that fight in Brazil, have that hometown advantage, but, you know, Brunson wanted to get it in, I think, North Carolina, you know, his hometown, so, I mean, I feel for the guy not wanting to go back out there. He just fought, he's coming off a win out in Brazil. He fought
he beat Yoel Romero. No, he beat Machida.
Nah,
you're right.
Yeah, he just fought Machida in Brazil. And I feel for the guy.
Yeah.
He don't want to have to go back out there. And, I mean, even though, you know, he just beat this man, you know, in Brazil, he could go back out there and still have a good performance. But, I mean, you're fighting somebody who, I mean, even though Souza's coming off a loss, he's still a lot more dangerous than Machida is at this time. Machida hadn't even fought in a couple of years. I don't think the last time we even seen Machida, I think, was when he lost to John Jones. I think that was the last time we saw him, and that was a couple of years ago at least. So in that
he was suspended for PED use.
Yeah. So, I mean, in that – and then you never know if, you know, he was just a shell of himself coming back, not having, you know, whatever he was on to help him. I mean, maybe he was only – because that's the same thing with Jones. John, you got to question these guys. When they come back, are they going to be the person, the fighter that they were before? And that's the thing is that – so the Makeda fight was a much easier fight for Brunson. Now he's got to take a top five middleweight guy out in Brazil. And like you said, if he can't be – you know, if he can't clearly win and be dominant in the fight, you know, without a finish, then if it's anywhere near close, you know, the scorecards are going to be for Souza. And he doesn't want to, and, you know, he doesn't want to go out there and lose to a top five guy because he feels like, okay, if I win this fight, then I'm in title talks. You know, I'm one of the next up for a title shot. So, and then if, you know, we all know GSP, you know, it probably isn't going to fight Whitaker. I mean, I want him to, but I'll be surprised. I'll believe it when I see it that he's going to. We're in the money fight era at UFC. GSP doesn't have to fight Whitaker. We know. Contract might say it, but we know he might not. I'd be scared of those hands too if I was GSP, to be honest. So if Brunson, you know, if Brunson's smart, maybe he sees what else he can, you know, what else he can line up. Maybe he can, you know, agree to the fight in a different location, maybe on neutral ground somewhere where he feels like he'll get a fair shake. So I agree with him for being hesitant to sign a contract. If he does go to Brazil, I'm going to root for him to finish Souza in the first three rounds. And from that point, you know, he'll be the top five middleweight and he'll be in title talks the next up, maybe even be able to fight Whitaker instead of GSP. Because at this time you have a bunch of guys who are just trying to get back in the top five. I mean, Rockhold's up there, but he's, you know, just getting back on his feet. So is Weidman. He just beat Gastelum. I mean, you have guys up there who were former champions
who are just trying to rise back up. Brunson's been winning. You know, he's been winning notable fights against big names, and this is another big name who's coming off a loss.
Hey,
so he can win here.
But let me ask you this, though. You know, when we watch UFC, Dana always goes with the hot hand. But if Brunson wins this fight, you know Dana probably going to get him the winner of the Whitaker GSP fight because Brunson will be a hot hand. You agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That'd be ideal if that did happen. I think if Dana were to do that, that'd be a real move from him. You know, as of recent, he's been trying to do. I mean, maybe it's not him. Maybe it's the new owners of the UFC trying to set up all these crazy fights. I mean, speaking of which, I might throw off topic, but T-Wood was or is still trying to get a fight with Nate Diaz. Man, what's up?
Who
came up with the idea for that thing? First of all, Nate Diaz is like, this man is kind of a bum, to be honest. Nate Diaz is really a bum. Like, if you think about it, like, the only thing that he has going for him in his career, is the fact that he beat McGregor. That's it. What else has he done besides that? If you look at his resume, he fought all bums at 155. The only notable people he beat was Michael Johnson. And then after that, you know, it's been 2 years since he's fought at his actual weight class. And he's number 6 in the lightweight rankings. Then the UFC is trying to give him a title shot at 170. He's had 2 fights at 170 versus a featherweight. What is going on, man? This money fight thing is ridiculous. Like, y'all putting together the most blasphemous ideas for fights. T-Wood will absolutely destroy this man. He will embarrass this man if they set that fight.
Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if y'all didn't know, my man Keys is the president of the T-Wood fan club. Now, me, I'm objective. And I'm about to be objective right now. Keys, me and you have talked about this in the past, about guys cutting weight. And I have told you that most guys need to fight at the weight they need to fight at a weight that they walk around at or a weight that they can make easily. Nate Diaz can make 170. That's why he's fighting. That's why they're trying to make the fight for Nate and T-Wood at 170. Because 155 at Nate's age should be out of the question. Now, Diaz and T-Wood is a money fight. That's why the UFC is trying to make this fight. I don't see Diaz beating T-Wood only because T-Wood has been active. But my only concern about T-Wood would be he's coming off an injury. Is he fully healthy? Is he ready for a fight action? Now, he might need the money. He might need the check. You know, maybe that's the reason why he wants to fight because that's the I think that's the end of year of Big Bang fight. But at the same time, I have to throw out this name because this guy has really been grinding my nerves the last couple of weeks. I don't like to curse on our show, but I'm gonna curse this time. Colby Covington, shut the fuck up. Get more fights under your belt before you start throwing out the name T-Wood. You calling him the gossip girl and all this and all that. First of all, you haven't done enough. We don't have receipts that you deserve a title shot other than you running your mouth. You need to fight maybe 2 more fights against top guys, and then we'll see what you do. After that, then you can say you want to fight a champion. But until then, shut it up, fight, and earn your shot. Enough said. Now, my man Keys, you from Boston. I mean, you live in Boston. I don't know now you from Boston, but I know you live in the Boston area. I asked Rodney early when we lost you about your Celtics. Are they for real? Or are they fraudulent? I need to know. What's going on with Boston, bro? Enlighten me.
This was... All right, so this is what's happening. Anyways, okay, so you have, like, you know, I had a couple people tell me recently that, like, they would, you know, like, oh, yeah, like, my girlfriend just getting into watching basketball. And I was like, man, I think right now is the absolute best time for her to get into basketball. The teams that have been forming.
I was an athlete before.
What is going on? And if you really think about it, every team is trying to, you know, get that chemistry together. And, you know, like the Oklahoma City Thunder, they, you know, that team looks excellent on paper. When those three got together, everybody was like, wow, this team is about to be unbelievable. But then at the same time, you think about it, who else they got besides those three guys? Everybody wants to be the star on the team. Everybody wants the ball. How are they going to, you know, how's that going to work? And then you have, you know, you have Kyrie, and then you have a couple of young guys. You got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and their chemistry is unbelievable. They, you know, they're good friends. They've been running the ball up, you know what I'm saying? Kyrie's been doing his thing. I think he had 46 last night before they played Dallas.
47.
Yeah. And you can see everybody's working their game, and everybody's just getting better around each other. So what I think is this, is that their chemistry out of all these, you know, super teams that have been forming, everybody, the Rockets, everything, the Celtics, without question, have developed that chemistry the fastest this season. That chemistry is there.
I agree.
It's been there, what, a 15 or 16 game streak. But at the same time, we just saw the Warriors win 73 games and go on to lose the championship. Now, if you were to say that them winning 73 games had nothing to do with them burning out in the finals, you are out of your mind. That had everything to do. It came down to, do you want to beat the record or you want to win a championship this year? And apparently they wanted to beat the record and then lose the championship, because that's what they did. So I think the Celtics are on a hot streak because their chemistry is there and they've developed early, and everybody is making everybody better around each other. But that does not mean that doesn't guarantee them to win the championship, doesn't guarantee them to be in the championship, and also it doesn't even guarantee them to be in the conference finals for the East, realistically.
Okay.
So we still need to see that longevity. You know, even being from Boston, I want to see it happen, and I think they have, you know, debatably the best shot in the East to go to the finals, but they got to
have that. You dodging my question, bro.
And they gotta work it out,
bro.
You know, in the long and keep this going. They have a good streak right now, but we still gotta see more. Yeah, now go ahead.
You dodging my question, bro.
What? Who have they played?
Are they for real or are they fraudulent?
Nah, I think they're for real.
Okay.
You couldn't tell.
All right. I'm gonna add my little two cents to this. One thing about basketball that I know, defense travels. It don't matter whether or not you on the road, if it's a 7-game series, a 5-game series, defense is going to be there. As long as they playing the defense that they playing right there, they got a shot to be in every game. My only complaint about Boston is when teams start to figure out we would double Kyrie, who else can score the ball for Boston? That's going to be their conundrum in the playoffs. When teams, especially with Gordon Hayward being out, when teams start doubling Kyrie, who else on their team can make plays? So hopefully, I know Marcus Smart can do some things on the offensive end as far as being smart, but Tatum and Jaylen Brown are going to really, really, really have to step up in the playoffs. So, we got a couple people on the line. I got my homeboy Dre. He in Virginia, but he's actually from Denver. Hey, Dre, what's going on with you, man?
What's good? What's going on?
Nothing, man. We're about to get into a serious topic that me and my co-host Keys wanted to get into. But let me introduce our other guest. Hey.
Hold up. I got
hey,
him.
Hey, Ronnie,
got
what's
him.
Going on, Ronnie, friend? Oh, you got
what's
him?
What's good, man?
Yeah, I got him. Ronnie, where you
y'all
from?
Y'all hear me? Go ahead. New Orleans,
Ronnie, where
baby.
You from?
The Big Easy. The Big Easy, New Orleans, man.
All right. We got a good topic. I've seen a whole bunch of people. This has been coming up the past couple of days, and I had a couple good debates with some people about it. It's a thing about eras, like eras in hip hop. It's always this era is better than this time, and people that are older than people that even us right here, we probably have. We're all from different eras, and we always think that this era is better than the last, and the next era thinks. This is better than the previous to that. So you have guys who are going to say, okay, like, I was listening to Run DMC, so, I don't mess with Jay-Z. And then the next era is going to say, oh, we listen to Jay-Z, why y'all listening to Lupe? And then Lupe, and then they say, oh, we listen to real hip-hop, this is Lupe, this is, where's the T.I.'s, where's the Kanye West? And then in the next era, they're saying, oh, but y'all don't have a Lil Uzi, or y'all don't have a 21 Savage, and we're all saying, I don't know what you're talking about. These dudes are like, crazy drug users out here, and I feel like you can hear it in the music. And that became a topic everybody's saying, but couldn't you hear, the drug influence within hip hop in all the eras? It was always there. There was always heavy drug use there. It just depended on who you were listening to. How you feel about that? Ronnie, you can go first if you want, bro.
All right. As far as like the drug influence, as far as like hip hop, well, it all started like back in the '80s, like with the Ronald Reagan era, and like guys like back then just was just trying to survive, and the rock era was just the best way of doing it. Guys are still doing it this day, but it was like. At first, it was just crack, now it's just other stuff. But either way, they were trying to, like, survive for a living for that. But sometimes you need that struggle story. And the struggle, and nobody, everybody loves a good struggle story. And the hip-hop era, the struggle story is like the trap, the streets. What you had to do to survive before you made it to the from selling dope to spitting dope stuff. But it's just different way they've done it, like, from before to now. Either way, it the dope era was more of like just the struggle story, the struggle talk for people to relate to them. That's how I feel. Go ahead.
I'm gonna have to come from, and this is Dre. I'm gonna have to come from another perspective because when I look at it, because me and Bo are gonna be in that same age group. I'm basically the same age as hip hop. I'm basically the same age as hip hop. So when I look at it, you still had the same, for lack of a better word, the same storyline as a story being told through hip hop. But the difference is that now, because me personally, I don't consider Lil Uzi Bird and all these other little so-called mumble rappers. I know it's categorized as hip hop. It's categorized in that genre, it's not even comparably close to what the origin and how hip hop began. But I'm digressing. But my point is, what I'm trying to say is that the drug use now is more pronounced, and it's more of a usage end and a usage message that it's a lifestyle and this is part of hip hop compared to
back then.
when cats were selling it, but it wasn't as pronounced. It's not as pronounced as as it is now. It's like it's the thing to do. People, in my opinion, they were doing it more because it was the lifestyle. As far as that's what they were doing, that's what they're grinding, that's what they were trying to do. It's almost like New Jack City was like. Worst thing you can do is use and try to sell. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But to me, it's just right now, it's not even it's not even a story of I'm telling you about it because this is what I had to struggle to get through. Now it's just, hey, this is what you do when you become a hip-hop star. You got to do these drugs. And then on top of that, they're feminizing the whole genre. So now you got cats wearing these skinny jeans, pink, you know, looking like women. And that, to me, you put all that into the same thing. The whole hip-hop culture is changing because if you look at it again, it's the money that's in it too. You know, money changes things. The big record labels have a persona that they want to present because they know it's going to sell records.
Yeah.
So that's just my opinion, because when I look back, as you're going to tell when we start talking about top five hip hop artists or top five groups or what have you, you know, mine are all going to be within my time frame that I understand that I got down with compared to some of the younger cats that may have a totally different idea of what they consider to be hip hop, what they consider to be, you know, number one in their categories.
Got the white shirt, bro. I got you.
Hey, Rodney, man, what you got a lot of distortion on your end, bro?
What? What's that again? Oh, man, look.
You got a lot of distortion on your end, dog.
Man, my friend's over here wilding, man. I'm trying to tell him to chill, man. My bad, bro. Y'all go ahead.
All right, man. So, look, check this out, man. This is my thought about that on the drugs and hip-hop, man. I know that, like Dre said, me and him grew up. Originally, in the videos, you had dudes drinking 40s. And then it went from drinking 40s to smoking blunts. And now these days you have dudes that are talking about popping mollies and doing Percocet and Oxycontin and all this stuff. And in this day and age in our country, opioid addiction is a serious thing, man. And it's kind of crazy that people will actually be telling people to do this and do that, you know, and they glorifying it. And they was talking about the cat Lil Peep that died this week. They was like, people gonna be, you know, doing all these pills and stuff and honor him or whatever. That's not smart.
I was gonna bring that up too.
That's just not the smart thing to do. I mean, like for me, growing up in the '80s, I seen what crack did to people. I seen what cocaine did to people. But at the same time, it's like, what happened then is happening now. Stuff is at a different level. It's more at the opiate level than it is at crack or cocaine, even though people still do that. And I live in Denver, the Mile High City. Weed is legal. You know, a lot of people come out here and perform out here now because weed is legal. And I get that part of the culture, but this pill popping thing, I do not understand it. It ain't something that I would do. So I guess that's what the millennials are into. But I'm not saying all millennials are into it, but I'm thinking that's something that's going on with this generation. Hey, Keys, what's your how you feel about this, bro? All
right, so I like what only Dre was saying about it. You know, I think my response would be something similar to that. But, you know, being that I'm, you know, a handful of years younger than y'all, I mean, of course, you would assume I have a different
perspective.
A handful? More than a handful. Anyways, so I'm a lot younger than y'all, but here's the thing is that I feel like you have, you know, I get a playlist full of guys, right? And I get a playlist full of artists. And, you know, say that's even only 10 years ago. So music that came out 10 years ago is already a different generation of hip-hop and rap, whether you believe it or not. 10 years ago is extremely different. The sound that was around is crazy. You know, the influence of Southern rap has gone, you know, is almost gone. Like, one of the only, you know, prominent names from the South is Big Crit now. That's really, like, the only guy. You know what I mean? Back then, who wasn't, you know, who didn't have, you know, a grill in their mouth? You know, who wasn't rapping? You know, you had Paul. But anyways, it's like, those dudes, they would make references to, you know, their drug use in their songs, and I feel like they would lean sip and things like that. And it might have been popular, but here's the difference, is that you wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't be able to tell based on the product that they were making in their music.
Right, right,
as
right.
to how heavily they were doing the drugs. Nowadays,
right.
they're such addicts that they can't even control the product that they're making. That's the difference.
Right.
And I think back then, so say, okay, the 90s, say, okay, the 90s hip-hop era, this is one of the biggest things. Lee, you mentioned about how it was about smoking blunts and everything like that, and that was still a big thing in the early 2000s. But in the early 2000s and the 90s, guys were using, you know, in respect to hip-hop, guys were smoking blunts, and that was the thing. That was creativity for hip-hop. You know, when you if you ever be in a cypher and you're rapping with a, you know, a group of guys, smoking blunts is big to creativity. That's the thing you do as a writer. Like, you know, you drink and you smoke weed. That's the thing as a writer. Like, I write music, and that shit helps me. So I understand where it comes from. But the thing is that once you get into, you know, Xanax and all this, you know, wild shit these kids are doing now. I mean, I don't even really know too much about a lot of the shit, but it's,
yeah.
Anyway, it's like it's not about creativity at that point. Y'all are just, you know, you're trying to appeal to what's cool. And that's fucked up because, like you said about the peep guy, I had no idea who he was until I heard that he died. That just goes to show how fucked up it is. You don't even get to learn, you don't even get to know the artist for being an artist before you learn them as an addict, and then they're dead. And then their friends don't even
right.
learn from
yep.
them. You know, they're going to keep with the same lifestyle.
Yep.
Basically, what I'm saying is the drug use that was in hip-hop was not heavy enough to where you could hear it in the music. I mean, I feel like Lil Wayne, you started to be able to hear his use of lean. The amount he was sipping, you could start to hear it in his music over the years. I think he had a big influence on a lot of these guys now. But these kids are over the top where you can't even think of who influenced these kids. Like, I can't even think of where that came from. It's just out of control. It really is.
Yeah.
I think that even you bringing up Lil Wayne, I don't think Lil Wayne glorified it in his songs as much as guys are doing it now. Future whole hook is Percocets and Molly. That's one of the hottest
yeah,
songs
off.
Of the year. Yeah, that's one of the hottest songs of the year, and people are loving it. And they're popping pills and stuff, and I respect Drake because he did like a way better way of what I was trying to say. I wish I would have said it that way, but like and it was like more stories of what they went through to survive with the drugs and stuff. Guys like nowadays they just popping pills just for the hell of it, just to be fun. And I don't know why. Like you mentioned the little peep thing. I did not know who this guy was. There's so many littles here nowadays, I can't keep up. This is the first time I heard who Lil Peep, and to find out he's dead is the first time I hear about him? That's crazy.
I was tripping on that. I was really tripping on that because when I had saw it, it was like on the front page. It was like scrolling through Yahoo or something. It was like rapper Lil Peep is dead. And then I go to Twitter, and it was like, yeah, make sure you do a Xanax or something for Lil Peep or something like that. And I'm like, really?
Oh, yeah, that was
stupid. I mean, what happened to, like...
That was stupid.
Because I know, like, for me and Dre, when somebody died, it was like pour out some liquor or something. What happened to...
Right.
When did we start taking, like, a bottle of Oxycontin and Percocet and... for somebody
well, that
died.
Something that he died
dead,
from.
Man, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
He died of an overdose.
Yeah, and
yeah.
The funny thing is, for why here they said that they thought he was asleep for the hours that he was going out until they realized, oh wait, he's not asleep, he gone. And they said before that he was just
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, they said the people
know,
on the bus were so stoned they thought he was asleep. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I never smoked a day in my life. I didn't touch no drugs, so I don't know how that science works. But that whole thing is crazy. And y'all saying pop, and then they pills for them. Y'all trying to die too?
Yeah. Yeah, man. They was, that's what they was really saying, man. It was crazy. P people was really
what
saying,
I'm saying my generation.
Like on Twitter, to pop pills for this dude and honor his death. But I'm gonna say this too, and we're gonna end it right here. Is this people out there that, you know, they go to the doctor and, you know, they go and fake that they get that they in pain and they go get Oxycontin, Percocets, and then they go sell them on the street, man? It's like medical care is for you, not for you to make a profit on. Why?
Right.
But I get everybody is trying to make a hustle, everybody trying to, you know, put some money in their pocket. But come on, man, you – Obamacare wasn't for you to make a profit off of. Obamacare is for you to get seen by a doctor and take care of your health situation. So I'm going to leave that right there. And then, hey, Keys, it's on you, bro. You the host tonight. Let's roll.
All right, so this one's going to be good. I mean, speaking of the hip-hop topic, we could just quickly jump into, okay, so I want to have everybody – I mean, I might even just – I might even just Lee, we might even just start with you, actually. I was going to say me. We're going to start with you. Lee, actually, we're going to jump into our favorite, your number one hip-hop album. And with that, you got you throw in an honorable mention, too. You want an honorable mention and then
okay.
Your number one hip-hop album. So whether that be your number one and number two or vice versa or whatever, maybe you can't decide.
All right.
Whatever it is.
Can I do my honorable mention, Lee? And then we'll come back and do the number one?
Yeah. Start with your honorable mention.
Okay.
Let's hear what you got, bro.
Okay, so my honorable mention was Outkast, ATLiens.
Mm.
If you don't know me, you know that I'm a fan of Outkast, and I'm a fan of Tupac. I'm a fan of Wu-Tang. I'm a fan of Ice Cube. I'm a fan of UGK. But Outkast, ATLiens. Is probably one of the dopest albums to come out the South in a man and forever. I'm just gonna name. I'm gonna name 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 songs off that album. Elevators, Me and You. Everybody know that song. The second one is Dope Boys, and when you listen to Dope Boys, just listen to the beat and listen to Big Boy Rhyme. Normally, when people think of Outkast, they think of Andre 3000. But
now,
on this
Big
song,
Big Boy
stands out on this song, and this beat goes so hard. The third song that I'm going to highlight off that album is Jezebel. Jezebel is kind of a laid-out track. It got like a little jazz in it, a heavy bass line, and Andre 3000 goes bananas on that song. Oh, my God, he goes bananas. Wheels of Steel. The reason I like Wheels of Steel because it gives me Drake can attest to
it. All right, then. Go ahead, Dre. You want to go next? Oh, my bad.
I got lost. I got dropped there and then came back. I was telling Bo before the show started that. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Nah, Lee,
okay.
I think Lee dropped out.
Okay. I was telling Bo before I came on, I was like, yo, because he had originally told me just one, and he's talking about like a genre from the 80s of just one group and all the different type of music that I've listened to. Like, that's like asking me what my favorite Kool-Aid flavor is. You know what I mean? It's just like too many to even try to act like I know. So I'm gonna tell you five, and just know that there's probably like 17 honorable mentions that are even close. I can even put up there too. So, my top five that I could just really feel comfortable with saying, of course, Rob the Top is my man with Criminal Minded. That is one of my favorites.
Oh, snap!
Yeah, I had to go there because he's just like the essence of hip hop itself. Then Illmatic with Nas.
Classic.
I had to put in Paid in Full.
Classic.
N.W.A. because N.W.A. by itself, and N.W.A. actually, I couldn't really decide between N.W.A. and De La Soul because both those albums were that was the transition of hip hop, changing in hip hop and change of how, you know, growing and the growth of hip hop going to different levels. You got your conscious, you know, social rap, and this, it was like the opening up of a lot of different genres, a lot of different artists coming in at that time. And then, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4. So that would be my 5. And I almost really, it's not, it's hip hop, but it kind of almost R&B, but it's hip hop. Lauryn Hill, Miss Education, and Lauryn Hill. That fire.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, yo, that by itself, yo. That, I mean, I don't even have to. I'm not even going to say nothing. I'm not going to say nothing. I just told you, the Miss Education, Lauryn Hill. All of us know. All of us know. So, you know, those are mine. Those are mine. And it was difficult. It was really difficult. And that's not even mentioning, you know, Jay-Z's joint and some others. But I just, I just got problems. I got a lot of problems, and I can't solve them on the show right now.
So. Oh, man.
That's real. That's real.
I feel your top 5, man. I really feel it. Damn.
All right, Key,
what's up, bro?
All right, so I hadn't put together a top 5, but I got my honorable mention and my number 1. My number 1 is my personal favorite hip-hop album, whether it may be, you know, in the hip-hop rap category or whatever, wherever you declare. So, first of all, are we doing honorable mentions first?
Yeah, do your honorable
mentions.
This
album
first.
Is my... Yeah, my honorable mention is Common, one of Common's last albums. This thing dropped in 2012, The Dreamer, The Believer. I don't know if y'all heard that album.
That was a dope album. I remember that.
If you're somebody who never heard Common, if you want to put somebody on game, you listen to that album. That's going to change their whole shit. Like, if they want to start writing some music, you listen to that. That is the divine inspiration. That thing, he starts out with bars the whole time. It's crazy. Lyrical. It's soulful. There's not a crazy amount of features, you know, mess up the flow. It just goes right through. That's a beautiful spot, right? The beats are excellent.
Yes, sir.
And The Dream of the Believer, that's the one right there. And I got something for my number 1, too, but... Who hasn't gone? Rodney, you want to jump into yours, bro?
Oh, this one's tough. I'm not going to lie. My top five, that's a tough one. I know my honorable mention is new, Jay-Z 444. But like personally, that album just dropped a lot of gems for me, like, to, like, grow as a person. 5, I would say Common, Fire Forever. That album said some of the realest things I ever heard, and that really introduced me to, like, hip hop. I would say Section 80 from Kendrick. That introduced me to his great lyricalness that made me start to, like, get hooked to Kendrick. J. Cole, Forest Hill Drive, some of the realest things ever. I'm trying to make this fast. I'm trying to make this fast. I want to take out time. 2, recently, Damn, from Kendrick. I think I'm more new era, so I still got more homework to do. So don't be too mad at me. I know some classics back in the day, but I'm more new era. Damn, that once again, gems and like some stuff, creative stuff that you want to say that people will want to say, but they can't because they're too scared to say it. And I'm one of those people personally. And 1. Kanye West Graduation. That's my favorite album ever.
I knew you were gonna say Kanye.
Of course, that he's number 1. Old Kanye. He was old Kanye.
Old Kanye was a deal, son. That was real life.
Facts. From College Dropout, Late Registration, and Graduation, 3 of the best albums you ever had. From the music level process. To the connection to the people, like, so much was, like, the whole thing was beautiful. The glory. Every time I hear that intro, I rewind it like 30 times before I play the whole song because I just love the way it just starts. And this other song, man, look, that's my top 5.
No,
go ahead, man. I just love that album. Go ahead.
That's real, son, and I have to agree with you. And if I can elaborate this really quickly, with Kanye, he is the perfect example of how he, by himself, he is a example of how hip hop changes when certain things are inputted into the environment to cause it to change.
Exactly.
If you look at his first three albums, especially his first album, he was in touch.
Oh.
His beats were there. His lyrics were there. He was on point. But when you start moving and tweaking, The Wire, that is the classic, son.
The very best.
I can listen through The Wire back to back all day long. All day long. And the thing it's so telling, because as he grew and as he changed, his intellect and his intelligence was still there to create the beats that he had, but the delivery and the lyrics changed. So it didn't reach out and touch as it did before, but the beats were still hard. The beats were still nice because he could still make those beats and people could pick, but the connection was gone. He was not the same dude. He's not the same dude now. And
I miss the old Kanye.
And the point where he changed is when his mama died. His mother was his anchor. His mother was his anchor into reality of life. When his mother died, that was it. And then, of course, he started messing with them Kardashians. And, you know, when they get a nigga, they turn a nigga.
Everybody keeps saying the Kardashians are like the sunken place.
They are the sunken place.
I got cut off.
Real.
Yo.
Well, I got cut off, so I'm going to tell y'all my top five. My top five was N.W.A. Straight Outta Compton. Number one with no radio play. Launch Gangsta Rap, whether you think that's good or bad. And you and gave these three pioneers from hip hop, Ice Cube, Eazy-E, and Dr. Dre. My number four was Wu-Tang Clan, 36 Chambers. Hey, it launched about five solo careers. We never had a group that big that they all could flow. And then my number three is just my personal number three. Is Lost Boys Legal Drug Money.
Lost Boys are so underrated,
man.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to that CD, man, you got Renee, you got Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, Music Makes Me High. Music Makes Me High, Jeeps, Let's Coos, Beamers and Benz, and Get Up.
Mm-hmm.
Lost Boys' first joint was a classic. If you haven't heard it, listen to it. Just open your mind a little bit on it. And like I said, my number two was Outkast, ATLiens. Now, I don't know. Hey, Keys, you gave your number one? Everybody gave their number one?
Yeah,
I gave mine. I try to go fast.
I didn't drop a list.
My number one was Tupac, Me Against the World. If you know me, you know that I'm a Tupac fan. And Me Against the World, So Many Tears, Temptations, Lord Knows, Dear Mama, Can You Get Away, Old School, If I Die Tonight, Me Against the World. That's just a couple of the songs off the jump. But the reason why I picked this album, it's a lyrical masterpiece. Pop, this was before he was angry Pop. This was Pop trying to reach your conscience, you know, educate you and all that good stuff. So it was pre-Bad Boy. And then when you listen to the songs, the beats are so comparable to the lyrics that it makes his story come through better and better. And then I think the most important fact about this album is it's still relevant today. If you listen to it today, the lyrics are still pertain to what life we're going through right now. But my only complaint about the album was he got If I Die Tonight. He had that as the second song after the intro. I would have moved that song to the last song and started with Me Against the World. But y'all know the classic line from this album is, back in elementary, I thrived off misery. God damn, that goddamn part was bad, boy. That's my dude right there, boy. So, all right, Keys, man. What's up, baby? Talk to us.
All right, so I had to throw together a list real quick while y'all was getting all that off. I got my honorable mention at number one. I was doing this shit last minute.
You were smart,
I got
man.
The honorable mention.
I know. That's how you roll.
I'll rush
through mine, man. I didn't get a chance to say Illmatic. I'll rush through mine. Go ahead. All
right, so this is what I got. So I got off the top. This is no order because I don't really know how I place these. These are like my favorite albums, so I don't even know like where they go. But so no order, top five. I got so Common, The Dream of the Believer. That thing is a walkthrough to hip hop. For anybody who's not a hip hop fan, they look cool. Nah, that was my honorable mention. I didn't say where it was at.
Okay.
No order. I got that. Right. I got T.I., Paper Trail. That's an excellent album. That's an example of a really street dude transitioning and really getting conscious with his rap. He broke down and got solid lyrics the entire album, told it real how it was. That's another one. You have somebody listening to that, it'll change the whole life. Another one I got, Ludacris, Theater of the Mind. That thing is unbelievable. It's a concept album, and it just takes you to another place. The title of the album explains it very well. Another one I got, I think Rodney had this, Late Registration, Kanye West. I listened to the whole album when I was going through a time that was difficult for me, and I listened to Through the Wire again, you know, and that shit changed my whole perspective on everything. It was crazy. I listened to the whole thing. You got from the intro to the outro, the way he had, you know, the voices and
everything
playing a part, you know, painting the picture in your mind.
Bernie Mac,
it's just crazy.
Yeah,
hold up. I got one more thing. I'll let you go.
Go.
The Game, the Red Album. That thing.
Oh, snap. I thought this was going to go with the documentary, though.
Nah. The Red Album, that's my shit, man. I mean, the documentary is a classic. But the Red Album, I mean, the intro when I first got it in the store, that was The Game passing the torch to Kendrick Lamar on this record. It's called The City.
That's right.
Listen to The City, The Game featuring Kendrick. If you listen to Kendrick, you know that. That was the song. So that was the transition for the West Coast, and it's an unbelievable record inside and out from front to back. The Red Album, fucking fire. So Rodney, what were you about to tell us? Bit of something like whatever you had right
now,
there.
No, I was quoting Bernie Mac, Mr. Wet. That's my favorite skit ever. What's up, Mr. Wet? That's my favorite skit ever.
Yeah,
you ain't got nothing else to do. We ain't going with that book bag. You ain't got that book bag. I love the skit so much.
Hey, but look, fellas, we got about a minute and a half left. So let me and Keys close this out real quick, and we're going to come back to y'all, all right?
Go ahead. Appreciate y'all, man. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, no doubt.
Word life.
Hey.
One love.
Hey, don't hang up. All right, Keys. Hey, man, you know we had another good show tonight, bro. So what's on your mind?
You know, what's on my mind is that you have – you know, Donald Trump, someone brought this to my attention and I didn't think about it. So you had like, you know, those few kids and they were out and they were in prison or something. And one of them is
it was three of them. UCLA basketball
the ball kids. He let them out of jail. And basically they were saying, how come Trump was paid so much emphasis on that, but didn't respond to Eminem with that verse in the cipher? What was the difference in those situations? He's so hard on them. You know, everybody who come up with his name, he pay attention to it. When LeVar Ball come out and say he's talking crazy on TV, he respond to it. When Eminem talking crazy on the raps, he don't respond to it. What do you think about that?
All right, man, my thing is this. Just for our listeners, we really don't do politics too much. But this is a situation where I look at the president as a guy that he really doesn't understand his role in this world. In this world, you're the most powerful leader in the world, free world. You're supposed to call over to China and talk to the president or the prime minister and be like, hey, man, what can we do to get these kids out of jail? They made a mistake. You know, we need to work this out before this become an international incident. But at the same time, is why do you need somebody to say thank you? Why do you need somebody to be grateful to you? They are a citizen of your country. You're supposed to do that. I mean, as the president of the United States. But at the same time, is Donald Trump is not going to go after Eminem because of Eminem fans. Most of Eminem fans are white kids. And if you, I mean, I don't know which better, what a better way to say this is, Donald Trump caters towards Caucasian Americans. And that has been his MO since his campaign. He could care 2 cents about what Hispanics or blacks or Asians think. He knows that Caucasians are the majority in this country. So why would he basically go on the limb and come after black folks or a Hispanic guy or do this or do that? He already talking about building a wall. He already called the players in the NFL SOBs. He think that players in the NFL are spoiled brats because they're making all this money and they don't have nothing to protest about. They're giving a voice to the voiceless. Our president is a delusional guy, and people that don't see this, you need to wake up. I know a lot of people like to say this term, I'm woke. No, wake up. Get out to the polls. Vote. Be a factor. Don't be silent. Let your voice be heard through your vote. And until people do that, politics will always be looked at in a negative light, you know. Until you cast your vote, until you become a voice, politics will be negative, man. It's just the way it is. That's my opinion. And be it right or be it wrong, it's mine. I own it. And if you got a problem with it, just tell me. And that's all I got tonight, man. So you can close it out, bro. Close it out for us.
All right, guys. So, no, it was good. Thank you. Thank you to all our listeners, anybody who was out there. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with whatever is on our mind. Feel free to call up. I always throw out the guest calling number every time, encouraging anybody who wants to call up and talk with us to call up. We don't care. Even if your topic is something different, you want to throw it out there, feel free to throw it out there. We'll chop it up. I'm sure one of us got an answer. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Happy holidays.
Happy Thanksgiving, too. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. So what's up, everybody?
Hey, yo, first of all, I want to apologize for a little background disruption, man. The stuff was just going on, man. I apologize for that.
It's all good.
We'll try to edit that out when we do. I'm gonna learn how to use the editing feature probably this weekend. But it's all good.
Man, it was a little stuff going on. I promise that won't happen again. I promise. I promise.
It's good, bro.
So, Dre, man, how you feel, Dre?
What's up?
How you feel, man?
I appreciate you calling in. Yeah, I like the show. I just think you talk too much. I want to hear more of Keith. You're not very good on the radio.
Hey, my bad, Keith.
I want to hear more
Keith. My bad, Keith.
Hey, Bo, you be hogging up the mic, yo. Nobody can say anything, son. What's going on with you?
My bad, dog.
That's why I tried to talk so fast, because I didn't want to feel like I was hogging the mic.
Hey, man, damn. I thought we was up. Hey, Keys, my bad, bro. I talked too much, man.
Wait, now you know you want to hear more of me?
Yeah, I was teasing Bo, saying Bo was hogging up the mic. I thought Keys was the host. It sounded like Bo was trying to run everything.
No, man. You know, it all depends on the flow of the show. We got the tag team, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just like to let it flow with however it's going, you know. I don't want it to sound unnatural or have me be talking over you guys or anything. So, I mean, even if and he's also hosted like the last like four or five shows we did. So, I mean, I imagine it's natural in his mind to, you know, have that host response to everything and be jump people into questions and shit. So it's kind of probably
He's good. I just got to give him a hard time because that's my boy, you know.
I already know. Hey, but look, this kind of like the after show. I mean, we still recorded and all, but it's kind of like the after show. So, you know, this is the part where we just talk and everybody just be organic, you know, have some fun with it, because we probably going to do this about five, 10 minutes. Now, I know that on our top five albums that we picked a lot of stuff. I mean, we went from Kanye to Common to Nas to Wu-Tang, N.W.A., Jay-Z, The Game. Now, I'm going to ask y'all this question.
Right.
When y'all pick y'all top album, what was the most important reason why you picked that album? If it was one thing that you could tell us about that album that made you make that number one, what would it be? Starting with you, Dre, your number one album was, what was your number one album again?
KRS One, Criminal Minded.
Oh, so why did you pick that?
Because he's the number one cat. He's the number one MC, and I love lyricists. So when I look at an album, I'm listening to lyrics. I'm listening to delivery, and he set that tone. And that was one of the first albums, you know, that introduced me to hip hop beyond, you know, everyone else. So that's kind of like,
okay,
you know, when I look at an album, I look at an artist, the whole nine, I look at delivery, I look at the content, and so that's just me, you know. So from there, you can only imagine. I go, like I said, from Rakim to Nas, I love Jadakiss, so I kind of go down that rabbit hole when it comes to me.
Okay. So, hey, Robbie, what's up, bro? You still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, baby. We here.
All right. You picked Kanye as your number one, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, now I know you said that when you chose Kanye, you chose the old Kanye, and you fell in love with the album that you chose. So, if you were talking to somebody that never listened to rap before, why would you tell them to listen to this album, the one you picked as your number one?
Well, it's really for two reasons. Like, for one, the great music in the background. Because if the beat is trash, I'm not listening. I don't care what you say. I don't care. You can say like the best thing I've ever heard in my life. If the beat's trash, hell no. So the beat's got to be on point, or at least okay, it's too on point. But the number one thing that made me put that number one, meaningful lyrics. Like a lot of things, like Kanye said to me in Graduation, just was just beautiful. From like Everything I Am to Champion, The Glory. Like I can name a few more, but it just like the whole album. Like he says, catchy things that you can laugh to things that you would think deeply to, the things would be like wow, like just the whole album. In my opinion is like wow, and if I would like let somebody listen to like Graduation, they're like yo, this is what hip hop really is. I don't listen to more of this. Because at the end of the day, the number one thing people love to hear is real talk, is real stuff. Like, not my generation. They just want to turn up, so I don't know. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I know, like, today's rap, the lyrics aren't as
prominent.
Understanding?
The lyrics are non-existent. because I know from like from my man Drake, from when me and him grew up, you had you had a lot of conscious rappers. Excuse me, like he said, we had KRS-One, we got Rakim, then we had Public Enemy, then we had Ice Cube, we had Big Daddy Kane, KRS-One, you know, the Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, Queen Latifah, and all them. But today, I think if you got a dope beat and you can get people on the dance floor, that's what rappers want nowadays. But at the same time, we can't criticize rap because rap is going to always evolve. Because if you look at from the 80s when rap first came out, it was like dudes just saying rhymes over a beat. Then you had dudes that came out with a message in the song. Then you had dudes that was just living a lifestyle in the song. And then you had dudes that could do a whole lot of things in the song. But at the same time, I'm going to roll to my man Keys because he had two common joints in his top five. I think he had two. Did you have two or did you just have one, Keys? Keys,
you on? Keys hung up. Keys hung up because you were talking too much again, Bo.
All right, my bad. All right, so I'm on.
Keys said, man, the hell with this, man. Wrap it up, D. Wrap it up, D.
All right, man. So to our listeners out there, this is the after show, and we just chopping it up. Is me, Keys, my man Dre, and my man Rod. We got me in Denver. We got Keys in Boston. Dre is in VA via Denver. And we got my man Rod in New Orleans. And
easy
for like I said, I chose Tupac, man, and on the, and my brother, he probably is mad as hell if he's listening, because he said when I came into the military, I just changed up hip hop wise, but I don't think I changed up. I think I opened up because back east, Dre, you can attest to this. Back east, it's all New York. It was back then. It was all New York. That's all we listened to, New York and go-go music.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I came into the military, I got to listen to Down South, Chop and Screw, you know, West Coast. And once I heard Tupac, not his first album, even though I got it, Brenda's Got a Baby, you know, whatever, whatever. That was his coming out party, but I think he could have came a little stronger. But once I heard him rap and the way he put his raps together, that's when I became a fan. Even though I hated the movie, I think Notorious was a better movie. You can't tell me that Tupac isn't a top five rapper. I would debate that with anybody to the day. And if you just go off a body of work, after he died, just off his vocals alone, they made three full CDs off his vocals with no guest appearances unless they wanted them. So let me ask you this real quick.
Go ahead. You said Tupac is of your top five of all time.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Who is he knocking off?
Well, he ain't knocking off nobody because he's number one. I mean, I got Pocket.
Okay.
I got Pocket. Now I'm gonna go 5-1. I got number five. I got Dre, you put me on the spot with this one.
Only reason why
number
I
five,
add.
I got
Only...
Biggie. No, I got hold on. I got Biggie at five, Ice Cube at four. Scarface at three, Rakim at two, and Tupac at one.
Okay.
That's
so,
my top five.
So, and this is not a combative statement, this is a question.
Yes.
So you have that top five. Shut up. So you had that top five. So how do you not have KRS-One in there? How do you not have whatchamacallit in there? Because you said Rakim, there's one more. Nas. Did you say Nas? No. You say Nas?
No.
Okay. So no. How do you not have those two in that top five?
Nasty Nas.
Just because they're not in my top five don't mean they're not great.
I don't know
right.
what I'm saying. I get you. I get you. But for you, since you define how your top five is, what with those top five define them greater than? Because Karis One is the godfather of hip hop. He's a father of hip hop, one of the fathers of hip hop. And he set the standard for lyrics, period. So as a default, and I'm just asking, as a default.
But I disagree with that, though.
Okay. Okay.
Because
tell me why you disagree.
Before there was a KRS-One, there was a Rakim. And Rakim is in my top five.
No, KRS-One came before Rakim.
No, he did.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
I'm going to have to do the research on that. I thought KRS-One came before Rakim.
I'm positive about that. Eric B is President came out before The Bridge Is Over and Criminal Minds.
Well, you're right. You're right. So you saved yourself. So that makes sense now. That makes sense.
You saved yourself.
You're good.
Oh, man. Dre, man.
You're good.
Lee, let me say it real quick. I like how Lee said, like, just because he's not in my top five doesn't mean he's a great MC. Because
right.
at the same time, y'all heard from my top five albums, and I was saying, like, I'm in, like, more of the modern era, like, just the current era. Like, but at the same time, I'm not, like,
breaking up again, Ronnie.
What's the involvement?
You breaking up again.
Y'all hear me?
Yeah.
He's not breaking up on my end. It must be you, Bo, because I can hear him fine.
No, I heard
all
that
right,
too.
Go ahead. Y'all judge like, off my top five albums. For my top five, the first time I was here on with Lee, that I didn't have not one mumble rapper or like the guy that they have now. Because like I actually like understand like what actually hip hop is, the lyricism. The connection, the bars, the understanding, the power behind what they're talking about. Like I actually understand that part. At the same time, like that's why I don't have like Biggie or Tupac in my top five because I didn't grow up in that era, which I wish I did.
Right.
I'm personally ashamed of my era, but at the same time, like I at least know enough to like. To have at least some guys. Cause I still got Nas at number four. Comet. Comet was rapping to before I was born. I was born in 98. I was born in 98.
God damn.
He was rapping before.
For real.
Like Water for Chocolate. Yeah, I know. I did this. The Note is my favorite song from the album. But yeah, like I at least know enough to be like, yo, these guys were great. These guys were great. Keep your head up. I get around certain stuff like that. Like I at least know enough to be like, this is what really hip hop is. But at the same time, sometimes you got like a personal connection with certain people. That's why I love
right.
him so much. That's why I love
Absolutely.
J. Cole so much.
Yeah.
That's why Jay-Z is currently my sixth man. Because before, yeah, I heard a good amount of songs from him. I knew, oh, he's an OG. But at the same time, this is my first time actually to a full album, which was 444, honestly. And that inspired me to be like, you know, let me listen to Reasonable Doubt. Let me listen to American Gangster real quick. Let me see what these albums
are. Yeah, I feel you.
They say those are classics.
Yeah, that makes
yeah.
absolute sense.
Yeah.
That makes absolute sense because we can do that in the same comparison to basketball. Because me and Bo are in the era of Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? And then other cats in the era of LeBron. So we can debate back and forth
and
who's
Kobe,
the best
yeah.
between the two and Kobe. Yeah, exactly. And we can debate
yeah,
between those three all day long and look at that body of work. But we're
yeah,
seasoned
at the same
enough
time,
because
you got guys that's not a day that don't do their homework. I know
right.
how great Jordan
yeah.
was.
Yep.
People barely even know previous great warriors besides Steph Curry and KD. They don't know who Byron Davis is. They don't know who Steven Jackson is.
Yeah.
They don't know Jason Richardson
yep.
is. They don't even know who Monte Ellis
yeah.
is. If they don't know these guys, they don't know their homework. They don't know what
basketball
really is.
Because
Because if you ask me in my teens what was like my greatest, my best rap albums were in my teens, I would say it would be Run DMC, King of Rock, and Beastie Boys' first joint. Beastie Boys' first joint was so, Dre, am I lying? It was so crazy because when you hear like Brass Monkey, Hold It Now, and Paul Revere, it was like, man, I can't believe these boys, man, they did this.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you some real life story shit right now.
When Paul Revere
first came out, and they had that beat with his shoot, they had that little, like they were turning the record backwards and then dropped in that bass. And that white boy came across that beat and said, here's a little story about Paul Revere. Dude, I'm like, wait, hold on. This is a white boy? This is a white dude? And he rode that beat through that whole song. And that by itself just showed you how a culture or how a style of music can put its thumbprint on a totally different race of people. This is a white boy on a beat.
Three of them with a black DJ.
Three of them with a black DJ. With a black DJ. And you compare that to, you compare the Beastie Boys and go all the way to the right and look at a Vanilla Ice and see how drastically different the music changed because of what was being accepted during that time. You understand what I'm saying? So now you've taken the same music, the same style of music, hip-hop, and you applied it to this white group and applied it to this white group over here and got a totally different outcome. Both of them, because of how the industry positioned them, made millions of dollars, but there was content in one, and then the other one was more of a crossover style. You know what I'm saying? But Paul Revere.
Yeah, because today's hip hop, like you saying, Dre, it's about how fast can I get you to sell records for me without me having to make you a star? Because I'm going to make money off your song, but I don't want you to be a star. See, when we grew up, it was about you're going to be a star. And you're going to make good records, and you're going to go out on the road. Nowadays, it's about we're going to sell your records on iTunes, and we're going to try not to make you as big a star as what you think you should be, but we're going to make some money off it. And then once you bring him out, we got somebody else in the, laying in the weeds.
Yeah, Lee,
it's different.
Lee, you can use Cardi B for that example. You can use Cardi B for that example. People know her for only one song, Bodak Yellow, a remix of one of Kodak's songs. I don't know which one it is, but I know it's his. Either way, that's the only song we pretty much know from her. It's been months since we heard another song from her besides Bodak Yellow. People that's actually diehard, a flower in my face. People that's actually diehard Cardi B fans know other songs. Besides, outside of that, all we know is Bodak Yellow. That's the only thing she performs. That's the only thing she sings. The only thing we hear on the radio. Besides this motorsport, that just dropped, two seconds ago? I'm barely hearing too much about that. I still haven't heard that song yet.
But
they keep promoting is Bodak Yellow.
And what I can't think of what the term. No, you good, man. I was just going to piggyback off what you're saying. Cause I can't remember what the term is. But the music industry now, there is no content in the music. It's not about what you're saying, because it's all about that outer.
No,
it's all about that outer appearance. No lyrics. We don't care what you're saying. Just like with mobile rappers. Mobile rappers will go all day long, and they're going to make them records. They're going to make that money because it's a trend now, and they're selling a idea and or a I can't think of word. What I'm thinking of, but they're selling an image. They're selling an image, not content. That's why Lamar is as good as he is, and where he is bringing back the idea of what hip hop was before, because there's content to what he's saying, and he's a lyricist, and he is a true artist of the game, and he's different than what these other rappers are. He's still making his money, but Kendrick Lamar has been able to place himself in a position where he's still as popular as these mumble rappers is because people are smart enough at least to see the difference between
exactly.
what he's doing
yep.
and what these other mumble rappers and all these other half-ass people are doing. Kendrick Lamar is still going to be around about 2 or 3 more years. These other little mumble rappers, they're going to have their time, but like Bo said, they're going to burn out and they're going to be somebody else in their place. Just like Young Thug came in place of Lil Wayne. You know what I'm saying? Lil Wayne is still relevant. He's still here. But since mm-hmm. Lil Wayne started moving out from under that, they needed somebody else to fill that gap, that be that kind of wild, strange, different style of rap that
yeah.
they can pull those people in to and sell some records. Well, pretty soon,
right.
Young Thug will be gone too. Lil Uzi Vert looks just like Young Thug. All them other, they all have their little cookie cutter styles that they have.
Yeah.
And as they move along,
hey,
they get more.
Let me go ahead
and
Let me go ahead and end this episode, and then we'll just keep on talking about this amongst us. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you've been looking to Lee and Key's Real Talk tonight. We talked about MMA. We talked about a little bit of NBA. We talked about hip-hop and drugs, and then we covered all our top 5 albums, various subjects tonight. The subject matter tonight has definitely been one that should spark your interest, especially those that have kids that's listening to hip-hop today. We don't want them doing drugs. We don't want them listening to rappers that glorify doing drugs. We want them to be a positive influence on our society. So thanks for listening. Happy holidays. And tune in next time to Lee and Keys. Follow us at Keys TV and at LEVANSTIN757. At @L_Rod and at the Grind Commissioner, or is it Grind Commissioner?
At Grind Commission.
Dre, what's your handle on Twitter?
At Grind Commission.
Thanks, God bless, and listen to us the next time we come out.
Yo, Rodney.